The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, we want to talk about the history of Westport, how the town moved literally from one place to another, what kind of industry was here, how the town got through the famine. And I'm joined by James Kelly, who's a local historian with the Westport Historical Society. James, good morning and welcome.
Morning, Pat. Thank you.
Now, we all seem to start, the contemporary history of Westport with Gráinne Mhaoil, the Pirate Queen. What's the story there? She was a real person, of course.
She was. She was indeed. Very famous in her own day, very famous now, very famous since. She was a member of the O'Malley clan. This was the old town of Carnamarth, was the name of the old town, the stone fort of the beeves. It's usually translated as the beeves, the cattle, the beef. That was in the O'Malley clan's territory, which they ruled for centuries. So Gráinne Mhaoil was, of course, the most famous member of the clan. She was born around 1530, give or take. A sea captain, raiding, trading, yeah. With other clans.
I was told yesterday that because the Clew Bay is, when you get in towards the coast, it's quite shallow,
yep.
That she used to lure vessels in. And, of course, they'd go aground and then they could be pillaged.
Well, possibly, yes, I'll put it there, yeah. There's a lot of stories of Gráinne Mhaoil. It is difficult to tell some of the myth from the fact. It is, but there's no doubt she got up to a lot.
And she did meet Queen Elizabeth I, or is that...
She definitely went to London. She petitioned Queen Elizabeth I. Whether they actually met is not recorded, but she was there, she was at her court.
The contrarians talk about Elizabeth had Irish, so they conversed in Irish. Others say, no, Gráinne had Latin, so they conversed in Latin.
I think some say English as well.
That she had English?
Yes.
Gráinne Mhaoil
had English. Yes, yeah. Anne Chambers has written a lot on Gráinne Mhaiel, of course, and I think that's, as far as I can tell.
So you're trying to figure out, do you let the truth get in the way of a good story?
That's the question. That's the question.
Now, moving on to the town itself, I mentioned that it had moved.
Yeah.
Explain how that happened.
Well, the old town, Carnamarth, was located very near to what is now the site of Westport House.
Okay.
So just right beside the town here. It was there for many centuries, small settlement, a few hundred people. In the 1760s, then it was the second Earl of Altamont, Peter Brown, of Westport House, who decided to create a new town. So he removed the old village, laid out the streets here of the new town, created building plots.
So this is a really planned town.
It's absolutely.
Not a town, as many Irish towns are, that grow organically. I mean, they start in one place, possibly on the banks of a river, and spread out. This was planned by
Lord Altamont. It was absolutely planned. It was, but it wasn't unusual. It was less unusual than you might imagine. Hundreds of Irish towns have some element of planning. They think sort of 700-800 Irish towns. So it wasn't unusual. 1760s was the boom time for that. Absolute boom time for landlords doing that, improving their estate.
Because they could. Nowadays there'd be objections to moving people out of their homes and so on. But in those days, they could just decide to do it. I mean, they did it in Paris. They cleared the centre of Paris to build the Paris we know now. They did it recently in Beirut about 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Just move people out and built. But that's what Lord Altamont was able to do.
That's absolutely. And it was, it might have been very welcome for the people of the old village, the new, clean, new, spanking new town, So it was laid out. He employed a man called William Leeson. He was an architect, builder. He had connections to the Earls of Milltown, of Rossborough, Leeson Street, so on. So he oversaw things. The role is not 100% clear what he actually did, but the building plots were laid out. They were let on favourable terms, cheap, low ground rents, long leases. So people came, they built houses. The landlord built some houses. Most of them were built by people who came along, took up plots.
What kind of a landlord were they over the century, the Browns?
Generally very good, I would say. I always think of it in terms of if it hadn't been the Browns, it would have been someone else. And it really would be hard to find, all things considered. The amount of money pumped into Westport, and brought to Westport, by the Browns from government and besides their own resources, it's incredible. I mean, the development of the harbour, the quay, all of that, everything we see here, basically down to their initiative. I mean, it's a very positive story, if you like, until the famine.
Now, what happened in the famine, and how did the landlords behave during that time?
It is a complicated story. It's not a black and white. The Browns and Westport House, they pretty much, they did well. They opened, they got relief committees together. They helped sustain the local workhouse. Westport was at the centre of one of the biggest poor law unions in the country by area. They did very well. It was when the rent stopped coming in, the landlords couldn't pay the rates, of course, the local tax that funded the workhouse system, the relief system. So it is, in fact, remarkable that Westport House and the Browns survived that, got through the famine years and just beyond. The famine lasted well into the 1850s here. Between 1841 and 1851, roughly 20% of the population died in the poor law union. So we're talking between 8,000 and 12,000 people, give or take.
Now, did people emigrate directly from Westport?
Yes, yeah. They always had done. They had before the famine, long time before the famine. They did indeed from the quay.
And they'd make their way, say, to Scotland to work. Later?
That was all.
Always
that was, well, yeah, the second half of the 19th century, yeah, mainly, that we have evidence of, if you like. But a lot of times they might get a boat from here to Liverpool, to wherever, or down to Cove, then the transatlantic. But some transatlantic ships did
left
leave
from here.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. There was a huge trade here with, Russia, we were getting timber from Russia, Northeast America, Oregon, timber, all sorts.
It's extraordinary because we would consider those even to be challenges today.
Absolutely.
And yet using sailing ships, they were able to do it.
I mean, they exported oats and barley, mainly San Francisco, these voyages must have been rough and ready, but they did it.
Tell me about industry in Westport. I mean, there was one significant industry.
Well, at the heart, if you like, of the new town, the plan to create a new town was the idea that to foster a linen industry. So there were already growing flax here for a long time. The Browns had been involved in the wider family for many years before that in trying to foster the linen industry, which the government at the time wanted. The idea then was that they would bleach it here, they would weave it here.
Add the value here, in other words.
Exactly. Instead of directly sending away the raw product, it did very well. I mean, it was a success. It worked out. It was bringing in tens of thousands of pounds per year. It continued basically until the 1820s. You had mass-produced cotton then in Britain. The linen industry in Ulster was much more industrialised. Westport, the likes of Westport, couldn't compete with that. It declined very sharply then. 1830s, it was gone then, basically by the mid-century.
So what was left for Westport citizens?
It was a market town, generally. Mm. It was a market town. It had a big hinterland, so there was always trade happening here. We're sitting on the Octagon, which was the marketplace. And we can see across the building, across the street here, is the market house. But there were always grain mills. There was a family here called the Livingstons. They did great work. They had a brewery, a distillery. a lot of these things went the way they went in lots and lots of other Irish towns. You know, the distillery closed in the mid-19th century. The brewery lasted a long time until the 1950s, basically, but they had stopped brewing earlier than that. But so there were employment opportunities, but the rural population in the hinterland remained very poor until relatively recent decades.
I mean, but I can tell now the town is certainly prospering.
Absolutely.
One last question comes from a listener. How many Catholics were allowed to build or buy in the new town?
I haven't seen any evidence that there was any restriction, really. And I think the penal laws and so on, the enforcement was very uneven, you know. So they were granted leases. There's definitely evidence of lots of Catholics being granted leases. If I remember right, they were restricted to 31-year leases. So it wasn't...
999.
No, and like Arthur, but... There were some nominal conversions, you know, so that they could get the 999 if they wanted it. But I mean, we're sitting in this building at one time belonged to a family called the McDonalds. They were very prominent Catholic family. They had one of the bleach mills here.
Okay.
Grain mills and so on. So they did prosper, and they worked, and the Browns worked with Catholics at all stages. So,
all right.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, James. Thank you very much for joining
us here in
the Town Hall Theatre this morning. James is a historian with Westport Historical Society.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.